Hello, I'm art prof teaching artist Alex Rowe, and welcome to our live stream. I'm joined today, of course, by Professor Liu, and today we're going to be discussing elements of art, specifically form. Now, if you want to build healthy studio habits, art prof has everything you need: critiques, tutorials, professional development, the works. So, Clara, why don't you walk us in? What are these elements of art?
I think about the elements of art as building blocks, the basics, things that you use to create any work of art. And actually, at this point, we've already done several streams that focus on the other elements. For example, we've done texture, line, shape, and value. And actually, later, we will be doing streams that have 3D artwork because for today's purposes, we're really going to focus on form within the context of 2D artwork. And we also have a stream on space as well. So let's talk about form, Alex, because I think when you put form in the context of 2D artwork, it really is an illusion because it's 2D artwork, but you're trying to make it look 3D.
Yeah, that is illusion is the best takeaway word for what we're talking about with 2D, because it's all about that act of magic, tricking the viewer into thinking something is a three-dimensional scene or image. And I mean, we're starting with Parmigiano, because yeah, like the sketches of these Renaissance masters are such good examples of some of these fundamental basics. And it's amazing seeing how in this stream we'll go through so many different styles of art and artists and how they depict form, because there is no one way to go about it.
We're going to talk about how the form gets articulated. For example, looking at the Parmigianino, he's sort of hard to pronounce. I always want to say Parmesan when I hear Parmigianino,
Yeah,
but
I get lost in how many IANINs there are, like Parmigianino, but
there's just like one too many. You just want to cut it
Yep.
back. But if you look at these drawings, this is basically form, which is built through cross-hatching. And I did do a stream recently where I demonstrated how to do cross-hatching on male torsos, so you guys can check that out. But that's really what we're going to be looking at today is, okay, how does the form get articulated? And then what is the form like? I mean, this is a baby bottom. It's so soft, right?
I don't know. Renaissance babies are always like jacked. It's so confusing. Wait, we actually had a really quick big question, like before we even dive into form. Neil Espinosa is asking, is it necessary for a piece to have form, or will a totally flat piece work? So I have, before you help with that one, Clara, I have an artist, Beardsley, who is almost exclusively not form, it's just line. And they work. Or would you say that Beardsley is creating form with his line?
I would say it's not form that fits in the reality of the real world because it's not highlights and shadows and things like that. But you can definitely have the feeling of form without it being so realistic looking. And we're going to look at a couple examples of artists who I think do that in a very convincing way. I mean, the Renaissance masters, they make it easy for us. It's not hard to see the form here. But I guess one of my things, especially when it's drawings of the human figure, is all the different types of forms you can get just on a human face. Like if you look at this series of portraits, that you can feel the bony quality of the nose, but then the mushiness of the cheek. And that's where I think people really become very masterful when it comes to form, because it ultimately is one form, it's just the head. But within that form, you can subdivide it into many different types of form.
Yeah, like form. We're actually getting some like follow-up questions to Neil's. Like Catherine Weber is asking, does a Rothko have form? And that's a really fun question of like that I think we'll start to get into in these. Because I think when you picture form, you picture human sketch, the Renaissance art, you picture what we just displayed. But I think it gets a little bit more ambiguous as we go.
I would also say that everybody interprets the elements completely differently. And I don't know if you guys know, but the art dare for this month is for people to take photographs of things that they see in real life that they think represent certain elements of art. And so one person might look at an image and say, oh, to me, that's line. But maybe Alex would look at it and say, oh, no, to me, I see texture. So there's no definitive answer. It's how you perceive it. Maybe some people would say, oh, I don't see form and Rothko at all. It looks very flat to me. Somebody else might say, you know what? I see atmosphere and space. Maybe somebody else does. So it's complicated because there's no correct definition.
Yeah, it's almost like that, you know, the parable of like the men feeling, they're blind feeling the elephant, and some of them think it's a spear, some of them think it's a hose, some think it's a tree trunk, when in reality it is all an elephant. And it's, yeah, it's all art. It's just different elements.
Let's talk about lighting for a minute, Alex, because I think that if you're talking about showing the illusion of form in a fairly realistic manner, you can't not talk about lighting. Lighting is critical to making something look convincing. So, for example, this is a contemporary New York City painter, Inka Essenhein. So how do you think she's using light to show form here, Alex?
Inka's work is so cool. Bias, I love it because it is like technically like fine art. It is in galleries, but it's so illustrative. And so I'm just in the like sidelines going like, yes, yes, yes. But they're using light and shadow to carve out this space. And this is such a good image to think about it. And remember the word illusion, the illusion of space. Where don't forget, this is just a two-dimensional image. But look at how you have that foreground, middle ground with the dancing baby, and then the background going deeper and deeper into those woods. And all of that space is created by form being created in each one of those elements, if that makes sense. The form of the trees and the baby and the space makes the space believable.
And I do think Inka Essenhein is really prolific when it comes to different types of form, because a lot of her stuff, the forms almost look like glow-in-the-dark, transparent forms. But then this one, I always imagine it's made out of dough and that it's really floppy and flimsy. I don't know. I think she just does an amazing job articulating different types of forms in her paintings.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's so cool how this one has such a cold light, which is... It's funny, like as you're mentioning that, it's reminding me that, yeah, like texture and form really do go hand in hand, don't they? Because, yeah, it's like the cold light gives such a different feel to the structure of all of these things.
Well, I think in some ways what we're getting at, you guys, is that it's really hard to isolate the individual elements because inevitably when we start talking about form, people start bringing up space. And then when we're talking about line, we start talking about shape. And so that's one of the reasons why I think about them as building blocks, because they work together.
Mm-hmm. W315 is saying, having control and doing gradients must be crucial to creating the illusion of form. And 100%. However, it's important to note, like we were just talking about, that texture does change everything. The gradient application of direct light hitting a cube will be very different than direct light hitting a soft woolen blanket.
Yeah, and light gets absorbed very differently depending on the surface. If you have a surface that's metallic, the light's going to be different than if it's a soft stuffed animal. So it's hard because I think oftentimes people ask us all kinds of questions. And I always feel like it's such a cop-out, Alex, but 9 times out of 10, I'm always like, it depends. Case. You can't really set such specific formulas for how things are perceived or even made.
Absolutely. And it's really funny, unrelated. I remember we were not too long ago talking about that weird imposter syndrome of like, oh, how does anyone really like teach art? Because there's so much to learn and understand. And really, I guess that trick is, it depends. Like, yeah, it could work for some piece. Like, yeah, but in isolating these elements of art, we're hoping that these little elements can make sense and like you can latch on to them and be like, oh, great, and have that understanding of a smaller element.
Neil is asking, but you don't need to have perfectly smooth blending to convey form, right? Absolutely. And actually, yeah, you know what's weird, Al? Right. I totally thought that when I was a younger artist. I just assumed the more blendy, the more smooth I drew things, the more 3D they looked. Is that like a sphere with a shadow on it issue?
Yeah, I think, I mean, speaking for myself, it was because as a, you know, elementary middle school artist who was loving drawing all the time, in those early formative years, like photorealistic art, that was like it. It's like, oh, wow, that's art, you know? And I think that that kind of incepted into our brain. And it's really cool to kind of, and that's why I'm so glad for this stream to really depict, like, because sure, we could have done the whole stream with nothing but like muscular Renaissance babies. But in doing all of these different elements and styles of art, we can show like form can be depicted in many different ways.
Like it can be a yucky gutted fish. I mean, I'm like, what is
your taste?
After I look at your paintings, I don't want to eat fish anymore. I'm like, could you make it less appetizing?
I'm getting hungry, I've got to say.
Really? This makes you hungry? This is like the fish is like gasping for air. I mean, it's such an intense painting. I love it.
Yeah, but it's lovely.
Yeah.
It just looks so chewy.
Well, it's so like juicy looking. You know that like slickness that fish have? Like I can feel the slippery surface. It's, oh my God, it's so good.
Absolutely.
So Maria is saying, I think that those individual elements can only be talked about in relation to others. They exist as a gradient. No one can define where one ends and the other starts. That is wonderful, Maria. I think that oftentimes it's easy to want really clear definitions, but unfortunately that's not going to happen here. So yeah, great question from Lillian. Very straightforward. What do you guys think is form? So what is this definition? What is your definition, Alex?
My definition of form is, I think, creating a believable structure. I would call it that, to keep it vague enough to also apply to more abstract elements of form, I think I see.
That's so funny because that's so different than my definition.
What have you got?
Well, because the thing is, when I hear the word structure, I think about bones, I think about architecture. But if you look at these William Merritt Chase paintings, it's these like blobby, yucky, stingray, gooey things. And so I guess for me, it's about tangibility. It's like something you can touch. And not just the surface, but that you could like pinch it and that it has substance. I don't know that that's the most concrete definition. But for me, form does not necessarily have structure. You can have a blob of jello, no structure there. But to me, that still counts as a form. It's funny how we have such different perceptions.
Yeah, that's absolutely. That's really cool. Structure, I think, just nails it, though. Because it's beyond just that outside texture. It's the interior. It's what makes
that's true. It is very much about the inside, because to me, texture is more about surface. And we're going to look at some artists later who I think do a good job of that. So Robert H. is asking, what are your opinions of Basquiat? His use of form was obviously very unique. I think that it's a very stylized version of form. And I would say that he's not the first person that comes to mind when I think about form. I think for Basquiat, it's more about color, it's more about line and about shape. That's not to say there's no form. It's just that, and you can tell me if you agree, Alex, I think in any given artist, certain elements recede and some come forward. Like if I look at William Merritt Chase, I do think about form, but I don't really think about line that much.
Absolutely. And it's funny, Dara was saying exactly the same thing. It'd be interesting to compare from across varied styles, like Beardsley versus Eric Kyle versus muscular Renaissance babies. And yeah, I definitely feel it, especially for this stream. Like it's so easy, I think, to talk about color. Like, we can say that, and all of you watching can think of your favorite artists and how they relate to color or line. Whereas form, you have those obvious depictions of form, but then you have others like Rothko is actually a really good one that was brought up of, is that form? And yeah, it becomes a little harder to put your finger on.
Oh, I like this one from B Dog Booze. Ooh. Who says form equals illustrating mass. That's a great word. I love the word mass. It's just so great for talking about this.
That is such a good definition, I think. Like, I might personally steal that for like what it's for. Like, because yeah, like it's perfect. Like, because that's it. It's not just the texture or a shape of something. It's the essence, that the mass of it.
Well, also, I think the word mass brings in this idea of weight. Like, for example, if you guys look at the fish here, you can feel the weight of the big fish on the bottom and then the little red fish on the right-hand side, I mean, part of its scale, but it doesn't have that, like, feeling of mass, like, slamming against the table. And so I know that when I look at a lot of artwork, oftentimes I think about weight distribution. Like, where is the weight coming from? And then what's an area that maybe is a little bit more airy looking? Okay, tell us who Beaufort Delaney is, Alex.
Beaufort Delaney was an artist who was famous for doing a lot of portraits of, at the time and currently, celebrities during the Harlem Renaissance. And his work is really interesting, not just because of the change and development in his work as he was diving into modernism, but also just his work in the concept of form. Like we were saying earlier, Beaufort's work would be perfect if we wanted to talk about color. But looking at it now in the sense of form, it is not that photorealistic carving out of the, we're not talking about, oh, look at the texture and the folds of the pant leg and that illusion of space and yada, yada, yada. And yet the structure, the mass is perfectly illustrated in these images.
Well, I think the mass for me, it's more suggested. It's not so carefully articulated. And so, for example, a lot of these portraits, they have a ton of texture on them. They don't have very clear lighting though. Like, you can't really look at this and say, oh, I know the cast shadows are here. He's not really talking about lighting here, but he is talking about surface and about mass. Like, I know a lot of people look at this and they say, oh, it's a portrait. But actually, I think the most massive part of this portrait is the shoulders and the body below.
Ah, it's funny because I definitely feel like in the head, it's doing this weird thing where it's simultaneously floating, but then not. Like, I guess, like with the first image we showed of Beaufort's work, it really has this vibe of the background has a form as well as the portrait itself. Do you get what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Which can, it's a really cool tension going on there.
Well, I mean, that's where space comes into play. Because as we said, it's hard to separate all these things. But even this one, which is flat yellow, doesn't have anything articulated back there, there's still a lot of dissonance between the brightness of the yellow and the relatively pale green color. And so that's a contrast that's happening that might infer space, but in a different way. So this is where it gets really complicated because, I mean, it would be so much easier if we just showed you guys Renaissance images. It would be so straightforward. But the thing is, it's not like that.
Yeah. And it's, I thank you for saying that, because I think that does make a narrow view where it's like, of course, I'm not saying like ignore Renaissance art. Like, a lot of Renaissance art is what inspired me as like a middle and high school student to pursue art. I was like, wow, that's cool. But it is very limiting if you think that is art, period. That's a part of art.
So the other thing is, we're not trying to tell you guys what to think. We're just trying to expose you to a lot of different things. You look at them and you make your decision. Hey, that's not my cup of tea, or wow, I really like this. Because I think that exposure to a broad range of options is really important as an artist. Like, you can't just think about things in such a tunnel vision manner. How about this one, Alex?
This one is super cool. And this one, oh, I can't remember if it was this one or the last one. Portrait-wise, that could work. Where one of them is of Ella Fitzgerald, I believe. I think it was this one.
I think it's Marian Anderson, isn't it?
I think you're right about, yes. But yeah, the form I'm getting from this is all in that cardigan. Just that heavy weight of that soft. It's incredible how that works.
And it's cool because actually the face, pretty flat. And I would say the face feels more like it's addressing shape. And it's a really cool painting because usually people think, oh, stylistically, I should keep my piece consistent. If I'm going to do this flat style for the face, I should do it for everything. But I just love how he combines the two styles, and yet it still comes across as one cohesive figure.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, Vincent Desiderio, why did you choose this artist, Alex, for form?
This one especially is like, I think it's fun for the streams, like form, Renaissance babies. No, it could be modern. And way back, we're going to like hyper-realistic painting of just that clear cut. These ones are ones where I'm like, the first thing that I notice in these paintings is just that sense of the mass of these figures, their presence, their the substance of them and the weight of them in this space. It's because all of Vincent's work is very, I think, emotionally raw and dark, both thematically and visually. And that weight, that substance of the form really carries that through, I think.
Before we dig into Desiderio, I just want to show this comment by $2 Bills, who says, this is so nice to watch because if I was in a museum seeing Beaufort Delaney's pieces, I wouldn't have thought of these things, but I feel like, I feel myself looking at them differently. Yeah. I mean, my feeling is that yes, none of us are going to museums right now for the most part, but we hope that by watching the streams, you guys will go to a museum and notice things that maybe you didn't think about before. That's really what it's all about. Alex, did you know that Vincent Desiderio was a critic in my grad school?
I did not. No, really?
Yeah. I had one 15-minute one-on-one critique with him when I was in grad school. It was very intimidating.
Is he as spooky? What's his vibe in real life? Is it kind of a spooky?
No. Oh, my gosh. He is such a vibrant, warm person. He's really energetic. He's so kind, and he's very personal. He's like one of those people, like he's such a art world celebrity, and people were like, oh, Vincent Desiderio. But the thing is, when he was talking to me, he was very down to earth. Like, I really, really liked him a lot as a person during the studio visit.
That's so cool. That's so cool. That warms my heart.
Yeah, it's so refreshing because we definitely had people come through our graduate school who were not accessible. And some of them were not that helpful in the studio visits. And I was like, dude, you're just here because of your name. You actually don't care about me. Development. So
yeah, and you feel like you have to like wave your hand in front of the critic, like, hello. Like,
hey, I exist. So I want to bring up this comment from Orangey, who's asking about this image. And they're saying, whoa, is this like a take on Ophelia's death? I mean, if you guys don't know what we're referring to, there's a painting of Ophelia from the Pre-Raphaelites. Look it up, you'll find it. It's so famous. But I feel like that painting sort of ruined floating figures in water for everybody in history. So it's like you can't make an image like that without having somebody bring that up. But I'll tell you, as far as paintings in that genre, I love this piece. It's horrific.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's like there's, I'd never thought of that comparison for this one before. Like, I'm like, sometimes things just, whew, but yeah, I'm like, I totally get that Ophelia vibe in that one. And all of these, I think, because of that painting and the subject of mortality in that way.
So Blue Wren is saying, is there anything more devastating than a child on a ventilator? Well, you guys can look this up because I did find an article about this, but Vincent Desiderio has, I don't know, I don't have the facts on what happened exactly, but his child was very, very ill. And there was a period in his life when he was just in the hospital every single day. So you guys will have to look it up. I don't have all the details, but I feel like these are so powerful because they're hard to look at, but they're also so just beautiful, if that makes any sense.
Absolutely. Like that kind of hard to look at, where I'd almost say important to look at.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I find them very difficult to absorb. On the other hand, though, the color in this and the way he uses the subtle shifts, like just a little more purple, a little bit more green, just a little more yellow. Like yeah. he does these very minor changes, and all of a sudden it's like, boom, there's form.
And this one is like, this is one of those pieces that does what Sargent does a lot, I think, where in that gateway between like people think like, oh, like hyper-realistic painting is the best painting. And then the slow reveal, like a lot of the hyper-realistic paintings you're talking about actually are not. Like this one has that illusion of not just this form and space, but all the details just in the face. Look at the rest of this image that you completely get and you completely take in that space and form, but it's just a couple brushes here and there.
He's well, really a master.
Of course, it's more than that.
Well, yeah, of course. But he knows where to put the emphasis in the painting. He knows that not everything in the painting is as important as other places. So he's very good, I think, at establishing a hierarchy in his paintings. And then these multi-figure compositions, oh my God, these are so gigantic, you guys. Look them up. There's another one called Sleep that is weird and strange and, oh my God, so good.
The first time I saw this, I didn't notice the bugs and the fish. It took like a minute of looking like, oh, that's a fish head. And it just, it's so unsettling in a wonderful way.
And I do think, Alex, it's hard to be a figurative painter today. I feel like so much of the art world
yeah.
just rolls their eyes at figurative painting. And I'll admit some of it's a little corny and I get that, but he's the real thing. If you guys want to look at figurative painting, look at Vincent Desiderio. He's incredible. Okay, now, totally different change of pace. We've got a surrealist artist here, Yves, I don't know how to say the last name, Tanguy? Somebody look
Tan guy.
Tan guy. So Alex, why is this in the stream?
I think this is one I'm particularly loving how we're just like y'all getting whiplash yet about what is form of just like hyper realistic, abstract. Because yeah, it's that question of I think again, I'll say the comment of illustrating mass, because this is perfect. It's absolutely showing that weight and that form, but at the same time, I love that trick that's going on with the background. Like, look how it's simultaneously a deep, infinite landscape, but also just flat. Like, how flat would that background look if you removed all of these little subjects and trinkets?
Tongue-y. Oh, it would just look like a Photoshop filter. It wouldn't look like anything.
Yeah.
All right, so Blue Wren did the research. Thank you very much. Tongi. Someday we'll have a budget to have a research team of fact checkers for all of our streams. But for now, we're just winging it, guys. Sorry.
Blue Ren, you are this stream's temporary intern. Congratulations.
The other thing I wanted to bring up about these is that the range of forms is really amazing. I mean, I know these are all fantastical forms, but the thing is a lot of them remind you of things in real life. Like you see that little green sphere in the middle? I just want to squeeze it.
I was going to say, yeah, it looks like one of those little, like a gusher, actually. Like
exactly.
What's funny, what Yves is bringing up in these paintings for us is like that concept of the, you mentioned this before the stream to me, but that subtle difference between like what is form and what is shape. So can you elaborate with these of like how would you define those two things?
Well, that's a great question. I mean, for me, a lot of shape is about tracing the contour. So it's a 3D thing, but if you're looking at it from a particular point of view, you will see this type of shape. But then if you move around it, you'll see a different type of shape. So to me, 2D shape, it's more like a specific point of view. 3D is like going all around. So you have to think about that. But I do look at some of these structures and see shape. Like the little red thing in the middle that has like the three Swiss cheese holes. Like I look at those and I think shape. I don't really think about form. So it gets confusing.
Yeah. And then there's some like the blue one on the far right where it's like if we think of it in a subject of shape, that firm rectangle there, but then formed, you could totally imagine like walking around that strange sculptural thing.
And it gets confusing too, because we're looking at 2D artwork. And so you can only infer so much at a certain point. And again, people perceive these differently. Like some people might look at those Swiss cheese holes and say, dude, Clara, I see form. Come on. I mean, it's up to the person for what they're thinking. So Christine is asking, I know this about form, but wouldn't this be a bad composition with the blank background at the top? So I'm going to guess, Christine, you're probably talking about this one that we were discussing earlier. What's your take on that? Because again, it's all interrelated, composition, form, lighting.
I'd say in this point, I'd be very interested to be at a museum, look at this painting, and then have like a perfect stranger walk up to me. And I would say, I think this is a bad composition. What do you think? Because for me, I agree with you, Christine, where I think what makes me think it's a bad composition is because it's kind of teetering that line in between abstract and substantive with its form. And I'm like, okay, so you've essentially put all of these forms on the same plane, on the same level in the painting, and they're just kind of put there. Like, it almost reads to me like a still life where someone just organized it poorly, unlike this one. But yeah, what do you think about that?
I'm going to disagree with you, Alex. Ooh, I'm going to say I think it's great, because the blank space to me is what makes the objects feel so tiny and almost pathetic. Bad for them. Like, I feel like they got left behind or something. Because if I look at this one, the forms are like big, they're confident, they rule the land, and they're totally in control. But it's like you look at these, and it's like the space just goes on and on. And I look at this to me is not blank. It might feel that way because it's not like trees or something in the background, but there are gradients, and you do start to get a sense of the air. And so we've had a bunch of streams on, quote, bad compositions, but the thing is, it's so subjective, and people disagree, and we can tell you guys that in general, people tend to do these things, and that's why they end up looking very cliche, but it's not to say that you can never make it work. You can. It's just it has to be more deliberate.
Mm-hmm. Like that one, actually, before I move on. Oh, wait, yeah.
Go ahead.
I love. Oh, no, I was just going to say that last image I thought was a stellar composition. I thought it had like a good sense of form and depth really articulated. But yeah, I mean, that's the thing. We don't have to agree. That's just something to talk about at the museum. But yeah, let's go to Wayne. Wayne Anderson is so cool. He's a illustrator who is still alive, but did a lot of his work in like 60s, 70s, and 80s. Based in the UK, primarily a UK-based illustrator, so he's not too well-known in the US, but his work is so cool and weird and dark. And I think it's a really good one to talk about that kind of presence of texture as well as form.
Yeah, I mean, he is just so good at form. I mean, I love this armor. I feel like I know what it would feel like to touch this. Because here's the thing, touch to me is a big part of texture. Like, there's a reason why when you go clothes shopping, you touch the clothing, right? Because you want to know, okay, is this going to bother me wearing this like really scratchy sweater or something like that? And I think Anderson really shows that. Now, that said, though, it's easy to confuse texture and form, and sometimes it has to do with scale. And the reason I know this is because when I used to teach freshman drawing at RISD, I used to always give this drawing assignment. It was just texture, make a drawing of texture. And depending on what people did, some drawings that look like texture, other drawings that look like form. And that's where it gets very confusing. For me, texture is on the surface, form is the inside. What's your take, Alex?
I think that's a good way to look at it. And that's why I love talking about Wayne in this conversation, because a lot of these we're looking at, like this one of the suit of armor, is a great example, I think, where texture-wise, it's awesome. It's knocking out of the park. But visually, don't you think it's a little flat as far as the structure of form goes? Like, take that horse's head. It's very two-dimensional. I do not believe it's a three-dimensional horse head. That doesn't mean I don't like this image, but it's funny how some of them, the texture is going so much stronger than the form. And quick shout out to Christine Zito for the $2 super sticker. Thank you so much.
Greatly appreciate your support. Any contribution you guys make is important to us. It's funny, Alex, I disagree with you. I think the
horse
is really form-based.
It's funny. I don't know. I view it as like a textured shape rather than like almost like a, of course, a three-dimensional cardboard cutout in front of that believable space, but also very painted. And I love how I think he's using that to kind of attract you to the focal point of the face, which to me has the face and the helmet area has the most form and dimension in the piece. The rest is just beautiful, beautiful texture.
I mean, to me, I just read the horse as being out of the spotlight, that the figure has the light concentrated on it. The horse is there, so they're more of a supporting player. But yeah, it really depends on how you guys look at it. John Murph is asking, do you guys ever look at a painting and ask, what do you think the artist's intention with form and other elements besides judging it at first glance? I think that that's inevitable, that you look at a piece and you say, okay, what's the point, for lack of a better word, of this image? Mm-hmm. What is the artist trying to get across? And this is a great image because, oh my God, the form is so diverse. Like the fingers, the shell, and then the fish at the bottom. I mean, oh, I love this guy.
There's a Far Side comic that this reminds me of two characters in a museum, and they're looking at a portrait. They say, the nose seems to follow you, doesn't it? Like just wherever you go. Oh, we have a really
shout out to Jasmine. Thank you so much for the super chat. We greatly appreciate your support. So yeah, Wayne's, for me, knocking it out of the park in terms of texture and form. It's like, dude, is there anything you can't do?
It's really funny with that. Oh, good, continue. Like the question of the intent of the artist on these elements of art. And I think that's one, viewing these elements of art as you create your own pieces can be a really cool project to focus on with your personal work. Of before you start a piece, you can have a plan about the mood and the colors and everything like that, but challenge yourself, how am I going to incorporate specifically line or texture or form into this piece to push yourself further?
Actually, Alex, I had a teacher in school who used to say that out of the three things, lighting, form, and color, most artists do two out of the three. That it's actually hard to do all three and get the image to work. So if you think about, for example, we're looking at Grunewald, who, by the way, is famous for, in my opinion, the goriest crucifixion you're ever going to see. That this piece is so intense. I mean, you guys will have to look it up online, but like, just look at the feet. I mean, oh my God. Like this is
like
this
the twisting of everything.
It's really hard to look at. But when I look at the legs here, I see lighting and I see form, but I don't see a lot of attention to color. Like the color is fairly monochromatic. So try it next time you guys are looking at something, like say, okay, out of form, light, and color, which ones are really being emphasized? Because it depends on the piece. And I don't think you have to do all three. I think you could just do one. It's fine.
Absolutely. And sometimes less is more with all of them. Like if you do, say, the cheesiest of cheesy, like a black and white image with a spot of red, everyone is going to be like, wow, look at that color. That's just how it happens.
Exactly. So what's going on with Grunewald? I think he needs to watch my anatomy streams or something.
Oh, they're so cool. They remind me of like Da Vinci's drawings of like the very like haggard old faces where like, these are just wonderful. I want to see the distorted forms of the rest of these. No, it's funny. This one has always reminded me. I don't know if anyone's read Dune. This image is what I imagine Baron Harkonnen looking like. This weird formless face. It's fantastic.
I mean, I like Grunewald's drawings because it's almost like their bones collapsed. And now things like it's like a lava of flesh that's like falling down. I don't know, but
it still has that form. It's just like all the bones turned to jelly.
Christine is asking, do you think it's best to focus on one or two? Do you think that too much focus on all three might make something look flat? It's not so much that it would necessarily look flat as much as you might be spreading yourself too thin. Because I do think that oftentimes I look at student pieces and people want to stuff their whole life history into one image. I'm like, listen, you got your whole life to make this work. You don't have to pack it all into this one image. So sometimes I think just dividing things up a little bit more can be more manageable as an artist. So you feel a little bit more focused.
As a growing old artist, I would agree, because I spent a lot of my young, like early 20s being like, this piece is going to be my masterpiece. And it was not. Like, you learn a lot more when you're just like a little bit at a time and you learn from every piece.
Okay, so let's take a look at Daniel Adele. And he's a contemporary illustrator and he does all these caricatures. And you know what I really like about him? He's one of the few people who works today who does caricature in a very like form-based style. I feel like a lot of caricatures, it's that like Bob Stock, like flat colors and shapes, which I love. I think that's a really cool style. But the thing is, that's the trend right now. And so here comes Daniel Adele, who's bringing almost like Leyendecker, Rockwell type of form. I don't know. I just find it very refreshing to see this being done today and having it still resonate with people.
Absolutely. And by the way, I'm so glad you mentioned Leyendecker because I know, because I've studied a bit of his stuff. The smoke from that cigar is directly from a Leyendecker painting. And that's such a cool thing to look at the form that something without a form creates.
And there's also this funny scene that he applies to people's faces. And it doesn't make sense at all because nobody's this shiny, right? And yet somehow the exaggeration of that sheen, it does show the fleshy quality. Or like these tears that are coming out. They're so overly dramatic. And I don't know, there's something about his work. It just makes me, again, want to pinch it. I don't know. It's
weird. Yeah. These I really would love to see like animated. Like this one especially, can you imagine him like as he's like rubbing his cheeks, the flesh in the face kind of like tightens and expands. Just like, I love that illusion that's created just in this two-dimensional image.
By the way, Alex, there's somebody who sort of does that. If you guys want to see cool animation from the 80s before all the digital stuff came along, look up Bill Plimpton. I'll put it in the chat. He's sort of like, not quite like Adele, but somewhat similar. So it's Bill Plimpton. Look him up. He's not as prominent on the web because he was around so much earlier, but he's got some really cool stuff. So this Google slideshow is available. The link is in the YouTube video description below, and that will be the case for a lot of our streams that are very slide heavy. We do have an Art Prof share today, which we're excited to show you guys. So this Art Prof share is by Joe Nowhere. And Joe explains in their statement, I've always been so fascinated with curly hair, but was very intimidated by it. And then Joe ended up watching my hair tutorials. So there was this one, there was a follow-up stream as well. Joe explains, I finally got the guts to do it. The biggest takeaway for me was to draw the hair in clumps in different directions. I was also amazed by Prof Liu's draw and erase and draw again process, especially in adding and removing the highlights in some strand here or there. How did Joe do, Alex?
I love this piece, like starting with Joe's target of the hair. It's so cool. And I love how in doing the lines of the hair around, it's not just making individual hairs, it's making a kind of faded crosshatch drifting into the back, into the background. I think it's really cool. And it has just a very cool spidery kind of look as well. But overall, the portrait itself is very captivating. You're doing your balance of lights and shadow and really framing that face really well.
By the way, Joe is here live with us in the chat. Thank you so much for joining us. Looks like you got a lot of fans in here, Joe, for your drawing that you're showing us. Yeah, I mean, I feel, Joe, what you did really well in this piece is you got the big picture of the major forms that we've been talking about today, but the like wispiness of those like stray hairs that are coming off. Like, it's so beautiful the way it's like heavily layered. It's so dense. Like, you really got like the mass, but you also showed, I think, the chaos of those individual hairs without making it look really anal. Like, oh, I went in and I drew every single hair carefully. Like, there's a lot of energy to this piece. So really nice job. By the way, if you guys want to be considered for an ArtProf share, just go to artprof.org, click on tutorials. There is a purple button, which will take you guys to the submission form. So you guys can be considered for a shout out here on YouTube. Or if you guys want to just show us on Instagram, you can just tag us. Make sure you use hashtag ArtProfShare so that we can find your stuff. ArtProf has a podcast. It's available on Spotify and also on iTunes. And in a few minutes, Alex and I will be hanging out in the ArtProf Discord. We will be in the post live streams channel if you guys want to talk about Swiss cheese holes and tangy and all those other fun things. We're happy to chat. Please subscribe to our channel so you can continue to grow and develop as an artist. And thank you so much to our top Patreon supporters. You guys are making it possible for us to keep our content 100% free and accessible. And do you see the second slide, Alex?
Look at that. Oh,
do you see the second column? I'm excited. Guys, I would love to see that second slide fill up. It would be so wonderful. Anyway,
still left-sided. It's a lopsided. But
it's lopsided. I think the composition's not working here, guys. So can you help us out? Thank you so much for watching. We'll see you next time. Bye.